G'day. Welcome to the OM Podcast. As I'm sure you all know, I'm Ken Humphreys, the iOS team lead and chief podcaster here at Outwear. I'm also a pretty nice guy, wouldn't you say, Pete?
No. You're really mean. No, you're actually a really guy. You're probably one of the nicest people I've ever met. Actually.
Oh, wow.
When you're well-behaved.
When I'm not in my cranky self, yeah. That's the voice of Peter Talbot, my co-host, our design lead, wearing red headphones, looking good. Also today on the show, we have a couple more Outwearians joining our rotating roster of co-hosts. We have Lucia Vong. Is that terrible pronunciation?
No, that's fine.
Okay,
good. I asked that yesterday.
Yeah.
I said exactly the same thing.
I should have asked you first. You are one of our awesome PMs, and you're also a bit of a marketing guru.
Thank you.
We've got you in today to talk about that. Well, why don't you tell people a bit about what you do at Outwear on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. I'm a project manager right now, but eventually probably moving into a marketing manager role. My background is actually in marketing and kind of had a really varied work history, my focus and my passion is in marketing and technology.
Tell people what you do as a PM.
As a PM, I guess my main role is to liaise and communicate with the client on how a project's going and make sure that the team, the developers, the visual designers, the testers all have everything that they need in order to deliver a project, which is usually a mobile app.
That sounds really easy.
Yeah, it's a cinch. I really like my role doesn't.
And rounding out the show today, we've got Eitan Linko, one of our founders and directors. Do you want to tell us what you do?
And great pronunciation, by the way.
Eitan Linko, thank you.
I am a founder of Outwear Mobile, which means that I don't do anything. I just sit around and point at people.
He said it.
We got it on tape.
I put you on the spot. Yeah, exactly. I can't remember what I do. I do a lot of interviewing. I do a lot of working with clients, I guess oversight of projects that we're working on, bringing a management team up to speed, so delivery managers and project working closely with our project management team.
And making sure we're all happy and safe.
Exactly. OH&S.
Thank you, Eitan. So I've got you on the show so that we can basically talk about your master's thesis, Luce. But before we get there, I reckon it's business time.
It's business.
Oh, yeah. It's business time. For anyone who doesn't know, that's a Flight of the Conchords reference. We're not just sprouting into spontaneous song. I wanted to kick things off with a little chat about the fact that these devices, Kent holds an iPhone in the air, are kind of sneaking their way into big business and corporations everywhere. And at Outwear, we are a corporation, a mega multinational app making machine. And when you look around, all you see are iPhones and iPads and
Android phones
and Android pads. That's a bad term. let's edit that one out later, George. but I kind of wanted to talk about that phenomenon, the fact that I guess if you go back 20 years, you kind of had big business driving technology. So you had the place where you went to use a computer was at your dad's work because you couldn't actually afford a computer or you didn't have, you know, a big enough space in your house to fit one, or maybe that's going back a little more than 20 years. But essentially we've kind of made this transition where technology was something that big businesses could only afford, and it eventually trickled down to consumers. But now, what do you guys think? Do you think we're in an age where technology is actually trickling up? So, you know, Apple and Google are making consumer-focused tech, and that's working its way back into enterprise?
Yeah.
Eitan, you're a founder. What sort of tech do you use? What do you...
Well, I love that term, trickle up. I reckon that's really cool. So I use an iPhone that Outwear supplies to me because it's very important for the founder to be up to date with the latest
mobile technology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so no, I'm always... Hang
on. He doesn't do any work and he gets a free phone.
I probably shouldn't have said that. Actually. We edit that out.
That's going to haunt you to your grave.
Means I have to give it back though when I get a new one.
Yeah, at the end of every cycle of iPhone, you get the brand new one and then hand down the last one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's terrible. It's the trickle down.
The trickle down. That's down the trickle theory. Down effect I was talking about.
But well, I think it's hilarious when I go to meet with clients at you know places like banks and stuff. It's still amusing to me that there's still people out there that have their BlackBerry mm-hmm. and their iPhone together mm-hmm. in their pocket because they've got their company BlackBerry and they've got their iPhone, which is what they actually use.
I can go you one better than that. A good friend of mine, and I hope she's listening, she's a lawyer. Yep. She's an adult lawyer. She's
as okay. opposed to
I'm getting to okay yeah as opposed to all those child lawyers
I object sir
she has a BlackBerry business phone for work mm-hmm. she has a personal iPhone and she has a Samsung Galaxy S3 which is her Smurf Village dedicated device.
Are you serious?
Deadly serious.
And she takes it with her everywhere or that's yes. just like a while she's in bed or something?
Yep.
What, you can't get Smurf Village on iOS?
No, you can, but it's so consuming. She just needs a dedicated device.
That she can put somewhere else. Leave that at home.
That is amazing.
Yeah, potentially.
She get her a Tamagotchi for it.
Yeah.
I guess maybe she has fear if she takes a Samsung device into a courtroom or something, she's going to end up playing Smurf Village.
Possibly, yeah.
But on her iPhone, there's nothing good you can do it on an iPhone. That's...
But yeah, that just seems like such a broken concept to have a work phone and a personal.
Well, I can remember, like, you know, obviously here we're a big Apple shop and I've kind of always been an Apple fan. And I can remember my dad having jobs, you know, when I was younger, like 10, 15 years ago, where he was kind of fighting for the right to bring his own hardware, being at Apple. Mm. But it's kind of, I guess the next evolution is bringing your own mobile phone. So I kind of feel like at Outwear, we're of the generation where we take it for granted. We're just like, well, of course I'm going to bring my phone to work. Like, duh, that's my
it's
right.
My phone. It's part of my arm.
Why would I not?
Even based on hardware, like when I worked at Nokia, mm-hmm. I wanted to use a Mac.
Nokia, I think it's pronounced. How is it pronounced? I hear Americans pronounce it like Nokia. You worked for them, right? So what's the official, what's the skinny?
Everyone just said Nokia.
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 The Finnish.
The North Americans like Nokia.
Nokia.
But it's, you know, it's like however you want to say it.
Nokia.
It's not going to exist in 2 years, so don't worry about it.
It's just historical.
Yeah, so, and they wanted to lock down the hardware. And when I first got there, it was like, here is this ThinkPad. So it just reminded me of that.
Yeah, sort
of.
It.
So I just took it and I worked on that for like 6 months and I just couldn't do my job with that.
I remember my worst device. Ever job. I won't mention the company. I mm-hmm. turned up and there was an old CRT display that was kind of blurry within half an hour. I already had the biggest migraine I've ever had in my life. So the next day I brought in a flat screen monitor from home. This wasn't even like when flat screen monitors were new. This is like, you know, it would have been hard work
still.
To find a CRT monitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just used that monitor every day until the day I left and I put it back in the box.
On the other extreme, I know of a company that they basically do IT for companies that use Macs. And mm-hmm. the reason that they came about was because executives were starting to want, like, in a company that primarily used Windows machines and BlackBerries, they wanted to go, no, I want to use a Mac and I want to use an iPhone and you have to integrate it into the system. And this whole business was built around integrating Windows and Macs in a system for a particular organization.
Which, I don't think it's unfair to say that Apple probably played a large part in that role where they make expensive, I mean, you know, it's coming down in price, but generally speaking, it's a luxury technology product. It's not for every single working class person has an iPhone. They were kind of aiming at these executive level people and it's really smart because it's given them an in into industry because they've basically sort of the people that have the most power in a company, they're like, yeah, let's get these iPhone things on board. Whereas if they were aiming a device, you know, at the absolute bottom level of the market, if the junior guy that just came out of uni is like, I want to use my Android phone and I am important, probably a big corporation isn't actually going to listen to him. Yeah. So I don't know if it was a marketing strategy, but it's certainly worked out.
If you look at the strategy with the iPod being the Trojan horse that you know, allowed them to sort of dominate the computer industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because they released a product, it was beautiful, it was perfect, and that, you know, got people invested into the whole concept of Apple. And then it was like, well, you know, what does their computer look like?
What's their phone look like?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I'd be surprised if it was an actual deliberate strategy, though. I think it just kind of, they made something cool, people started using it, and they're like, hey, have you noticed?
No,
just,
yeah, there's a bit of a push in business people. Rationalization like going on there. It's like, see, I knew that would happen. I'm a genius. My name's Steve Jobs.
And I just wanted to touch on the fact that Office for iPad is coming out soon. And I just think it's, I don't know, I'm kind of, I'm not shocked by it, but it's just so interesting that if you cast it back 5 years ago, you would say that a platform missing Microsoft Office could be really significant. You could say, like, you could potentially argue, well, Microsoft, you couldn't run a business on devices that don't have Microsoft Office.
Mm.
I feel like that's something you would have said 5 years ago.
Yep.
And I mean, it's probably true to an extent. A lot of our computers, some of our computers, not all, have Office installed. But I feel like, yeah, we're at a point where it's basically the Microsoft model is kind of outdated. I feel like they've kind of missed the boat.
Yeah, a while ago, probably about a year ago, I was still hearing about people that were waiting, you know, weren't buying iPads because they didn't have Office and they were waiting for Surface to come out, the mm-hmm. version they would actually buy that they could run Office on. But I think everyone's just given up now. There's so many other tools like Evernote and things that are actually useful to use when you're on your iPad.
Well, and again, that's the mobileification of the I don't know, the sector, because it's looking for like a slim, just do one thing. So let's approach this from an app point of view, which is I want to take notes. It's not approach it from a Microsoft Office point of view, which is I want to do every single thing that man has ever done on a computer.
Yeah, I want to cater to 60 billion people and have every function there possible.
I think it'll be super interesting to see what Office is when it comes out, like what
is
features
it actually
are integrated.
Officially coming out?
I don't think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be really
dull and
boring. I think
rumored late March, early April.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. It might be worth discussing.
I think in what we're seeing, because we use Google Docs here for everything now, and we're just sort of moving away from, what's the
Office.
Mac one called?
Pages.
Like Pages and Keynote and all that sort of stuff. But everyone is just forfeiting features for convenience, I think. So it's... but they've got like 80% of it there. So I think most people are happy.
Yeah.
But if you speak to, say, like our bookkeeper, for example, I know that it's a bit more challenging for her because there's a lot of stuff that Excel does. The thing in Google Docs isn't quite up
but
to
I mean,
snuff.
But that's, to me, that's...
But she's a power user.
Yeah,
you know?
That we should have... We should, for power users, you make a power tool, but you don't make everyone use a power tool just because power users need it.
Like an orbital sander?
I don't need a drill just to do my work, but I don't know. Yeah, you need a sander, so it makes sense to me.
I'm confused.
we went from tech to hardware, like hardware store hardware.
But like 80% of people don't know how to use Excel properly.
Oh, yeah.
They can't even make a series of numbers. That's beyond a lot of people. And I think it's kind of a problem that was never solved, is that all these businesses use Microsoft Office, but people don't know how to use them properly, so they're using them inefficiently.
Yeah, they're touching like 10% of it.
And also they're creating extra work, because instead of using the tool as it was, you know, designed to be used, like templates and stuff, they're copying and pasting things and ruining formatting.
But you can argue that that's software that perhaps hasn't been written with the right focus.
That's
software that's been written with the features in mind, not necessarily the user experience.
Absolutely.
Which is probably true, because Office has come from, you know, a decade ago, and this user experience driven software, that's kind of a newer... Well, not a decade, 2 decades ago. But it's definitely only the last 5 years that we've really started to think about software in that way.
But you have, like, Office is such a monster. It's just this huge, rolling, slow-moving thing that took over the world.
Mm.
And there's no way it could be based around one user. Like, it's just, it's too big. Yeah. It sort of needs to die and go away.
I always wonder about the developer that gets to work on stuff like the rotating sentences in Word, you know, things that, no, you know, there's stuff that's really, really
1%
deep
that no one ever uses. Yeah.
That you're the guy.
We should get that guy in for the podcast. It's like, I do advanced macro acceleration.
Tell us what it was like when you made the leap from 60 degrees to 70 yeah. degrees. How did that make you feel as a programmer?
Who here learnt as skills, Microsoft Office skills like in high school.
At school, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was taught to me in high school. Yeah. And it was year 8 or year
that,
9.
That was such
class.
An important thing to everyone. Yeah. It was like, you have to know this. This is, and I guess it was for a while. Like, it was kind of handy to know, but
I'd be really
I hope that's changed.
I've got a friend really who's an IT changed. Teacher, and I should talk to him and see yeah. what is actually happening now. Whether is that taught in primary school, and by high school, it's assumed that you know how to use a computer and productivity software.
Yeah,
or is it just not taught at all because everyone has been using?
Well, that's what worries me now, because there's all this debate about, oh, should we have iPads in schools and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. I'm concerned that kids, and I'm totally just doing one of my trademark off-topic
Pete rants. Rant.
I'm concerned that we're doing the same thing with iOS or that platform, and it seems to be like the new computer, which was a PC, Windows-based machine, mm-hmm. is becoming an Apple device.
So maybe. Yeah, maybe. So basically in 10 years' time, there'll be the next generation of outwear podcasters sitting in these seats and going, I remember when iPads were cool devices.
Yeah.
And they had all these apps and there were so many features and you had to interact.
There's like a real lack of focus on open source tools and in education,
yeah,
I feel.
I see what you mean. So we're locking ourselves into a new garden. It's not the Microsoft garden, it's the Apple garden.
I think.
But they're both gardens.
Yeah.
But Apple is a little bit more expensive.
Well, I would rather eat an apple in a garden. Or would you rather have a window in a garden? This is a great philosophical
Can
debate.
I actually just say something?
You should be teaching kids on cardboard squares.
Yeah, yeah. Wireframes. Just wireframes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the point. I don't think when you're talking about education, it's not. You shouldn't be teaching the program. You should be teaching the skills, like
yeah, the concepts.
Like in university, I was taught Flash. Mm-hmm. Okay, but yes, probably a waste of time.
That
now
must have been suck trying to write an essay on Flash.
But it looked amazing, and it had this sweet preloader.
Every single letter like slides in from a different place and explodes.
So when I was in high school, we were taught Word Perfect.
Oh,
I don't even perfect. Really know what that is.
Eitan is 70 years old. But I mean, the skills from that, you can take basic animation skills and design skills. Like, it's still applicable to everything else, mm-hmm. even though, you know, I don't know all shortcuts and stuff now. It's that, you can throw that away.
You still know that software can do these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that was a really interesting conversation, the fact that we started talking about business and ended on education. Maybe that's
they're all
saying
one
something.
And the same. It's all the circle of
the machine, man.
Life.
It's the machine. Lucia, I would kind of like to talk to you now about... Well, I'd like to talk to all of you still, but...
Can I just
focus
say
my attention on you.
That yeah. you should be talking to me as well?
I'm talking to you too, Pete.
Because I didn't go to a fancy school like Lucia over there. And I don't have and a...
You probably went to a fancier school than me.
Well, I don't have a...
Pete, I can tell...
I don't have a list of
I can tell by your haircut that you went to a fancier school.
Yeah. I don't
oh, that's not meant to be a diss.
East side hipster.
I don't have a list of diplomas and degrees and masters, but
true.
I did go to a marketing school called Life.
Ooh.
And
I went to that school too.
It's a bad school. but no, before I moved into mobile software, mm-hmm. My entire career was basically working for digital marketing agencies.
In that case, I'm going to talk to you too.
Oh, no.
Everyone joining the conversation. Luce.
Yes.
You're doing Kent. Your master's. As I understand, the topic is essentially should apps be a service or a product or a good? Expand.
So I wrote a thesis recently about apps and...
Did you use Microsoft Word?
I did. Uh-huh. But that was because it was mandatory to use Microsoft Word and do double spacing and use 12-point font, and I don't know who...
How can they
possibly
the
read
software?
12-point font?
How can they know what you... Oh, because they want to just read the file, not print it out.
I think they actually print it out.
Anyway,
we're off topic. Yeah. Essentially, my interests and my passions are around marketing as a function, a strategic function, and how technology fits into that. Just because I like gadgets and stuff. And
what do you mean by marketing as a strategic function? Usually I'm like the tech nerd and I know what everyone's talking about, but I'm the marketing noob.
So. I was actually thinking that. I was like, I don't want to look stupid.
Well, I guess the way that I see marketing is a little bit different than generally what people think of when they think of marketing. I think a lot of people think about ads and promotional things and packaging and that kind of
advertising.
Advertising, essentially. Yeah. For me, that stuff's the end product of good marketing starts at a really strategic level from a business perspective. So from the very beginning about what you actually provide as a business is from a marketing perspective, because if we go back to the beginning of marketing, it was about exchange. So exchange of goods, usually between two parties or more parties. So I give you something and you give me something back. That's a very basic definition of marketing. It's so like we go to the market.
Good marketing is I get to give away lots of things and I get to get lots of things I want in return.
Yeah, it's about exchange of value. I give you something that you value and you give me something that I value.
Yep.
That's the very basis of marketing. So
isn't that the definition of trade?
It is, but the marketing term actually comes from market. So when you go to market, what you do at the market is you trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from evolving from that, what's happened is we had this great industrialization age where people realized that they could make things, physical goods, at a really cheap price and make lots and lots and lots of them, and then they put it out to market and hope that lots of people buy them at a inflated price so that we make a profit.
So that became the point where demand could outstrip I've got it the other way around. Supply could outstrip demand.
Yeah,
therefore you needed to market your product to make sure there was enough demand for
exactly.
your supply.
And competitors as well. So
how smart do I sound?
Yeah,
right
so
now,
you
Pete?
Know marketing. Wow. essentially, yeah, that's it. So what started happening was everybody thought I can make a lot of things too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to show your advantage. And you do that through marketing by communicating what's better about your product. But still, the function was you put something out there and you hope that people get it.
Yeah.
And people choose it over competitors. That's changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it moved from that really good
give you,
space.
You give me.
Yeah, paradigm to a more consumer-based paradigm. So we think about who is actually going to want this product and how do we make it more valuable to them and what's actually of value to them.
Yeah, so it's not here's the product, how do we make people think they want it?
Exactly.
It's what do people want? And yeah. How do we make that?
Yeah. And so advertising in most people's minds is some business is trying to convince me that I need this thing, but I really don't. And most people think that.
Like Microsoft, for example.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Honestly, I love my Microsoft Surface 2. Honestly, that's the campaign. Anyway, it's working really well, I can tell.
But yeah. But I think that that's flawed. I think a lot of people think that's flawed because I think, you know, as consumers, we're much smarter than that. We know what they're trying to do. So the best marketers actually produce products, like come up with a product concept that is of value to someone. They know who that target is and they know how to communicate to that target that you want this thing because it serves this purpose for you. So it's a win-win situation. We give you something, we go back to the beginning, I give you something that you actually want and you give me something that I actually want.
Okay, so that is still focusing on products though, right? Like we're still talking about a physical thing or not necessarily?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Well, from my perspective, it gets really interesting. Traditionally, we think about products as either a good or a service. So goods, really simplistically, are something that's physical, tangible, and can be consumed. And services are intangible, often time-based and provided by other people or businesses.
So which one's Angry Birds?
Well, this is the interesting thing. Is an app a product, a good or a service? And I think that line is not, it's not a concrete black and white answer.
We were talking about this before and had a nice analogy, or I'm going to change it slightly, but when software was a physical product that actually came in a box in the shop, you could say, I'm going to buy that thing. And you would buy that product and having those floppy disks or whatever, that meant you could put the product, you could use the product basically. And if you gave those floppy disks to someone else, they had the product, you didn't have the product and you couldn't use it.
Yeah.
But now we've transitioned to this point where everything's software. I mean, it's digital. We don't need a physical, you know, my phone or my computer. Yes, that's a product. I can clearly see that. But my software, is that a product? Or
yeah. Well, it's a really interesting way to think about your phone, because most people, at least here at Outwear, are really attached to their phones. And
I'm not physically touching mine right now, and it's making me feel bad about myself.
Yes. they're an extension of us.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of research done where people who put emotional investment into things like a teddy bear or, you know, your phone, mm-hmm. in the past, traditionally people have not wanted to let these things go. But when it comes to a phone, what's really interesting is we are pretty much ready to switch to the next best model as soon as it comes out, regardless of how emotionally attached we are. Actually, it's the opposite. The more emotionally attached you are, the more you want the next one.
That is so...
But what are you attached to at that point? Are you attached to the physical phone? Are you attached to the operating? People as easy to switch from iOS to Android or the other way around?
If you look at a phone when it's off, it's not very exciting.
Exactly. Mm. So we want the phone because of all the services it provides us with. And that's where apps are incredibly powerful and interesting, is that it's not about the app. It's not about Angry Birds. It's about what does Angry Birds do for you? And I think Ken and I were talking about this earlier, where even if it feels like an addiction, that addiction is serving you a purpose, and you're doing it because you're getting something from it.
Can I point out that my addiction is Disco Zoo, not Angry Birds?
Everyone's playing that.
But if you think about most of the apps that we build, most of them are free in the App Store. So they're definitely not a product in the sense that this is something you pay for and you get a thing. Like, you know, the model is we'll give it to you for free, and all the information and the service that's coming through that app will be beneficial for the end user and for the company that's mm-hmm. producing that content in the first place. And then you've got things like terms like subscription, which usually aren't associated with a product either. That's more of a service kind of thing as well. So,
but you could argue, that's a product. You're exchanging money for goods. It's just that the goods are transient.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be money.
So is watching the AFL, is that a service or is that a good?
Well, yeah, I think you could argue it both ways.
Yeah.
To me, I think.
Yeah.
Before talking with you, Luce, I would have said that was a service and these things are good. But I feel like now I'm just getting to the point where they're blurred.
Yeah.
They're both at the same time.
Does it matter?
It's quantum physics, essentially.
Well, this is the thing that you brought up, Eitan, is, you don't actually have to pay money for an app, but you still feel like you have you're entitled to it working and to service if it doesn't work, and you're entitled to bag the developers if it doesn't work properly, but you haven't paid anything for it. And that's because you've invested time and effort. I've downloaded this because I thought it was going to do something for me.
I think there's something.
It's an investment.
There's something special and peculiar about apps as well, where you have that little icon sitting on your computer, on your phone. Sorry, I confuse the two all the time.
It takes valuable real estate.
But it's
phone.
It's like teaching your brain that you have a real thing on your phone. So as a little kid, you had a bookshelf and you had books on it. So you're like looking at the spines of all your books. You're like, they're all things that I own. And it's emulating that idea. Your brain is going, this is my digital bookshelf. And look at all the products that I own on my bookshelf. Even though like you said, it's not actually a thing. It's just a window into a service. It's just information.
What gets people so upset about an app? Like, if we're taking that analogy, you know, if you had a book on your bookshelf that you bought and it wasn't a very good book, I'd just stop reading the book. I wouldn't write a rude letter to the author.
Speak for yourself.
I think it's a few things. It's convenient and it's easy to do that. And I think people genuinely think they're helping out the developers when they post, like, you know, crazy stuff.
They can be. Yeah, if it's like, this app crashed when I did this thing.
Yeah,
and I think that's a fair call. It's essentially bug reporting
and feedback.
We want to know about bugs so we can fix them. But when
it's like 1% of the reviews.
When it's just like, this thing doesn't do what I thought it would
do anything to do with
what
socks.
I wanted it to do.
When people talk about socks in there.
Socks?
Like, pull up your socks.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're being ageist now.
Can we just close out the podcast just by reading reviews of some of our apps?
In amusing voices.
Only the five-star ones.
I don't think so.
Talking about reviews is interesting, though, because there's a big gap between the consumers who use the apps and the developers, regardless of whether you are the developer owner of the app or whether you're like Outware and you service an organization that owns the app. There's no kind of direct link where you can go, okay, that I want to talk to this person because, or this group of people because what they're saying is of interest, or I want to correct what their understanding is. There's this unspoken rule that when you push out an app, it has to just do what people expect it to do, not what we've designed it to do, but what the audience expects it to do.
Yeah, I think this kind of touches a point that to me makes it easy to think of a product and a service. Typically when I buy a product, what I buy is what I get. So I think of when I buy a new shower to go in my bath at home, I know that that shower is not going to evolve over time and become better as time goes by. Like, it's not going to have new modes.
But might get like a nice nice patina on it. Might get some nice maybe calcium deposits.
Who's using it, but yeah. Essentially, to me, that's easy for my brain to go, that's a product, because it's a single snapshot in time. I've bought that product and that's what I have and it's not going to change. Whereas when you look at software, when you look at an app, even if you pay for an app, you pay $10 for an app, you have that expectation that it's going to change over time, that it's going to evolve and improve. Essentially, that's kind of what people have been taught to think.
Yeah.
It's funny. And that's feeding back. Like I was in the car before and hooked up the phone to the Bluetooth and someone called and it came up with the option to listen to it through the Bluetooth and it said version 1.5. Parrot version 1.5, you can connect to that. And I already started thinking, there must be a later version of 1.5. I've got to somehow work out how to upgrade this. Yeah. It's going to turn into something amazing if I upgrade it to 1.6. Yeah. God knows what's in there.
2.0, oh my goodness.
My network died at home the other day and I was like, I know what'll fix it. I'll upgrade the firmware on my my modem. And I did, and it grew legs, and it like started doing push-ups, and it was just like so much better. It was amazing.
You call up your phone provider, and you're like, "Yeah, could I just upgrade you? Can I get the version 2 of your service, please?" So, I what you were sort of heading towards there, I think, was the idea that as producers or as marketers, we should be engaging more. Is that
and also we should be thinking about apps or. Software as services, and I know there's a lot of different kind of perspectives on that. But essentially, when you put out a program, it's not done once you release it. You know, version one is absolutely. Version one, and unless you have the capacity and kind of desire to maintain it and improve it and actually invest in it, then it kind of becomes useless. Mm. There's a lot of marketing theory in the last decade that talks about how we're in a service-dominant economy. The most important thing is value, but value is only created when people use your product. So regardless of whether it's a thing or a service, if people don't use it, there's no value there. If I download an app and never ever open it, it's of no use to anyone, not me and not to the developers. And when people use things, they learn things. So you learn that the thing that you bought does more than you expect or does something differently. And so you would change the way that you behave. I mean, it's like if we look at phones, it's changed.
Well, I can think of it. There's a little tech startup in Silicon Valley. You guys probably hadn't heard of them. They're called Google. And
you're always doing that joke. I do that every time I've heard that joke.
Zing. It's because it's classic. It's never going to go out of... It's a service, Pete. That's my comedic service to you, is that joke. It will always keep giving.
Can I just
to me,
that?
they embody... you want to
one star, pull your socks up.
sorry. Google. So I feel like they embody that service idea. When you look at their Gmail, Google Drive, even Chrome, they've gotten... users, us, into the mentality that the software is going to keep evolving.
Exactly.
And it will keep improving its value and our feedback will, will be listened to. I just feel like they've kind of ticked all those boxes. Would you say that? Are they the poster child of this movement?
I think Google is a great example because they do essentially they provide a service. But the most interesting thing about Google is the service that they provide to end users, they don't get paid from the users themselves. So the consumers of their products are not the people who pay for it.
It's advertising,
which is what you mean. Yeah, it is advertising, and they have managed to make that business model work.
And it's funny,
incredibly well.
And I would say that that's a yucky business model. Like, I would say if you asked me 10 years ago, I don't know when I started using Gmail, but if you said, do you want an email browser experience that's driven by ads? I'd say no way. Like as if that's what I'm interested in. Like,
you want
to and I want it and I love it and I use it every day.
Yeah,
we pay Google for the Google app.
Yes, but generally Google didn't make its millions and billions and gazillions of dollars from the users of their apps.
That's what we pay.
Yeah, but that's a different thing.
I think that's a different argument because
it's a value add.
It is.
We seem to be talking more about consumer
based
activity, right? Less enterprise.
Yeah, because if you look at apps, this is also where it gets interesting because people don't want to pay for apps. And we know that. We see how many gazillions of free apps there are. But to maintain an app, it's expensive and it takes a lot of people. So how do businesses pay for it? At the moment, I think we're a little immature in our marketing strategies in that most marketing strategies copy Google and go, well, if we can't get the users to pay for it, then we'll get advertisers too. And so it's really ugly and it's really immature. It's a really kind of rough way to do it, which is why we have all these ugly, you know, low-res ads in our apps. But, you know, I think that things are going to change. I think that if you get creative people together and they can think of new business models, like Google, you know, that at the time, that was revolutionary. It's like, what do you mean the people who use your things aren't going to pay for it?
I'd say that's already happening. When I think about most of our apps, there's actually very few of our apps that have advertising in them. Most of them are free. Most of our apps, the revenue or the value that's generated through them is from the user actually doing what they do in the
engaging
app.
So, for example, service.
The CCAP, you know, just the act of using the CCAP.
That doesn't have ads. That's only an app about ads.
Yeah, well, you'd call it ads, but Seek probably wouldn't call them.
Yeah, call them,
you know.
No, and the people,
job listings.
The people using the app, that's what they want. It's the thing they want.
Exactly. Yeah, but if we look at Seek's a big organization, but just say you have a great idea and you can provide a great service through an app, but you're a small organization, how can you maintain the amount of capital you require to do that, to maintain
an app? That's
a different
question. Are apps, is the app model even feasible for the person that has an idea on the street or, you know, a small business? Is an app even the right way for them to go at all?
I think that if you're creative enough and if you're innovative enough, you can come up with a model that works.
Well, I would question if you're saying I can't make my idea work because, you know, this model of creating my app doesn't work. I question that maybe your idea. I mean, yes, maybe you can come up with a new model that will work, but I would say probably your idea isn't
feasible
enough. It's just we're just proving it for you.
Yeah, it's like
making it obvious.
You know, you do a business plan and you go, well, this is not a feasible business plan.
Yeah.
But if we limit ourselves to what has been done before, then you'll never get any better. And that's where I think that things are going to change. You know, if we look at Kickstarter or other ways that people are trying to get products out there, whatever products, there are other ways to maintain services that are not based on you pay me and I'll pay you, which is, you know, I think overly simplistic.
I want to go back and focus in a little bit on the idea of software that updates itself. We touched on it a little bit, but I think it's as I said, Google is really good at that and the web has taught us that. So if I go to a website and 3 days later the interface is completely different, I just sort of accept that. I just go, well, yeah, this is the web. This is what happens on the web. Stuff updates. And I feel like we're at maybe, you know, the first in the lifespan of mobile apps, we're the babies of that stage. So I think Android's had it for a long time, but iOS finally has that background updating of apps.
Yeah.
So when you go to use your app again, as long as you've had a network connection, your app will have magically updated in the background. But I still feel like we, as app developers, we have this mentality where we need to plaster it all over the app and say, look, it's updated, it's new, it's changed, it's modern.
Yeah.
But maybe is that, should it be that apps evolve so frequently and so naturally that you don't have to shout from the streets? It's like, do we need to get the point where consumers and developers just both have the mentality that when I download your app, it's just going to grow at a steady rate over time? And I'll, you know, from a developer's point of view, our side of the contract is we'll keep supporting it. We'll treat it as a service and we're not going to aim for version 1.0 and then leave it to die. And as a consumer, I might accept that I won't write my one-star review until it's had a few chances to iterate, and then I'll write my one-star review.
Mindset's actually starting to change. And I think the thing that changed it was auto-update, mm-hmm. like just that small mechanism, which meant that you didn't actually have to go to the app store and tap, you know, read what's in that update and then decide whether you're going to update or not.
But I still feel like the apps that I'm seeing, they're popping up alerts. And so I wouldn't have realized that they'd been updated, except that there's an alert going, hey, we've updated. Look at us. Hey, guys, update.
Do you mean push notifications?
Or no, it's just that's the first time you start in the new version of the app. Which, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad model, but I'm just sort of hypothesizing maybe in 3 years' time that will seem cute and naive because we'll have trained developers and consumers that software just naturally evolves. And if you make a massive change that you need to teach the user about, sure.
It's a good opportunity to, as Luce was talking about, you know, get that value across to the user.
I think it's also a different problem, though. I think one of the research in apps shows that when something doesn't work as we expect it and we don't give it much of a chance with apps, which is really, again, different to other products. We don't go, oh, I'll try it again later when they update. We kind of just delete it.
Yeah.
So I think developers are trying to say, hang on, don't give up on us yet. we're going to fix this and we'll make it better based on your feedback. And I think that's what I was talking about, where there's not a really good mechanism at the moment for consumers to talk to developers or where you can't build a relationship where you say, trust me, we're listening to you and we're going to get better.
Well, at least, I mean, the Play Store, you at least have a mechanism to give
to respond
a comment. But I think the fact that on the Apple App Store, the fact that anyone can write any comment that might be completely untrue, I think there's a way for you to flag a comment and say inappropriate or something like that.
Yeah,
I think
that's probably more around.
But there's not language. There's not that facility to have a dialogue. So Luce, maybe it's, we're kind of trapped a little bit, and it's not such a good situation because it's basically in Apple's and Google's hands.
Well, it's,
do you think
it is and it isn't? Like, you know,
we can directly engage with our consumers without the App Store.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of apps, big apps, and apps that are actually there to provide a service that have other infrastructure around it. You know, usually there's a website, usually there's another service that the app complements, and through those other channels, if you're coming from a marketing perspective, those are the channels where you want to engage with your consumers and actually establish some sort of relationship with them. Yeah. And I don't mean a one-to-one, how are you doing every day? That's kind of intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
It should be that the consumer trusts that whoever's providing the service, if I have a problem, that I'll be able to contact someone or tell them and then get some response. Well,
what if I don't know, Eitan, maybe you can think about this from a client point of view, but what if we put Luce's phone number in all the apps that we make and they could just send her a text?
That's a great idea. 04.
I don't even give my number to clients.
But you could lead the movement. You could be like the messiah of the direct communication movement.
Well, I think that's like essentially the problem is that it's not really, people don't want direct communication. What they want is service. Like, they want to know that something will get fixed. If I say this is broken, it'll get fixed. I don't need someone to call me and say, oh, I'm sorry.
Hey.
Yeah. I just want to know that it will get fixed.
Do you want a free ticket to our launch events?
Yeah. You know,
you could just make a standardized error when an app crashes or something and says the app has crashed, but don't worry, there's going to be an update really soon, so just keep checking and it'll start working.
Yeah, because you know, automated messages are, like, people love them.
People will never realize. They'll think it's a little person watching on the other end.
And
just
responding.
Like, sent a notification.
My favorite was that the Tour de France app this year,
yeah,
which we didn't develop, but it's every time you started the app, it would come up with a message saying, we know that section of the app doesn't work. Right. It's going to crash. And
are you serious?
Yeah.
That's nasty.
But it will get better.
It is an interesting concept, though, because it's almost like you're trying to humanize an app.
Mm.
Because rather than it just being this weird like machine that works, you're trying to, yeah, you want feedback.
Well, like, if we liken it to a human situation, you know, when I go into a shop, if I get bad service, what are my options there? I guess I can tell them to their face, if you guys don't get better service,
give me the manager.
Yeah, I mean, does, as we're saying that this is a software problem, but is a society problem? You know, I rage it at Mikey and all the public trains and all these things in Melbourne that I rage at, but I don't feel empowered to give feedback and to know that there'll be an improvement. Like, yeah.
And it's also, I think, apps, because apps are the front facing, they're like the poor bank teller.
Yeah.
It's just teller has to tell you that, you know, you have to pay a $30. It has nothing to do with them. It's just in the system, and you start yelling at that bank teller. I'm showing my age again. You know, the app is, there's apps now are so complicated to integrate, at least the kind of apps that we work on, integrate with so many other systems that if the video doesn't work in something, it's generally not the app's fault. It's some system three levels back that hasn't kind of pulled its weight. But it's the app that gets the bad review.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what you buy into, isn't it, when you create that app. I think a nice way to loop it back is that, yeah, to me, perhaps apps get a slightly unfair, you know, disadvantage. They get a lot of stick. George, could I please have a can I get a latte? That's George, our producer, just taking out orders. Can I get a beer, mate? Sorry, I was saying. I think that apps get a lot of stick because they're on our devices that we have an emotional connection to, in our pockets, in our hands. So it's not like I don't have a bank teller that like follows me around and I just turn around and she or he is there and I say, "Oi, how much money have I got?" But I do get that experience from my phone, so I do expect, I have a higher expectation of it because it's with me.
I think expectations are sky high because there have been a lot of great apps. And if you look at the native apps on the phone, they're all like, you know, close to perfect. They all do their job really well. So if you compare, you know, something that hasn't had a huge budget and isn't that highly polished to something that has had, you know, like, 5 years in development and all these people working on it and all this time and money invested into it. There is that expectation that every app will meet that level. And when it doesn't, people just get angry.
But like, it's also, I guess, like the app is the touch point, just like any other marketing collateral. Like if you're a retail chain and you have, service assistants in every shop that you own, then those people who serve people are your touch points, and what your shop looks like is your touch point. So you're going to complain about the shop. You're going to complain that this shop didn't have the things that you advertised that it did. And it's often not the shop's fault. Like, we go back to the bank teller. So the app gets the rap because it's the touch point. It's the end.
So it does mimic real life.
Yeah.
In the same way.
But I guess, keeping that in mind and actually knowing that and going into that with our eyes open when we're developing apps, we should be, I guess, aware of the communication that we're presenting. So just like the bank teller, the one that's just rude and says, "You asked $50 and that's just the way it is," to, "I'm really sorry, this is the system. If you know, this is your possible things you can do about this, so you can write a letter to here, or I can fill in this form for you." You know,
what's a letter? You keep using words that I just don't understand.
You should be able to provide solutions in the app or through the communications to say, "We've encountered a problem," and
yeah. So that's kind of step one, I guess, is like that's the step that takes us onto the good path, is just improving the way we communicate with users. Whether or not it's this amazing dialogue and discussion that's really powerful, at least we should start by you know, offering a nice face for them to talk to.
Yeah, and you know, it's about, like, we're talking about making a good app means making a really user friendly app. At least, like, that's our philosophy. And
absolutely,
if it's user driven, then everything has to be on the app side. The user doesn't care that there's a stream or there's a server or there's whatever behind it.
Yeah, they shouldn't have to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they have every right in that sense to expect that to be there.
I know we're really flogging the real life analogies, but it's like if you get into a car, you know, you expect it to perform.
Yeah.
Right? You're not going to go, oh, well, I know that the factory in Germany that makes these gaskets, like, they had a really harsh winter and so it perishes sooner. So now I like my oil's gone
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Like, no one cares. You just want it to do and what you've paid for or what you've invested. You know,
you're absolutely right. Why should, yeah, I guess, but that's our perspective as developers, isn't it? Because we see all the stuff going on behind the shop front.
Yeah.
So we know. So it's the same thing with the car manufacturers. They're going to have a different opinion of manufacturing cars than the consumer. But yeah,
I guess that's what's so important about something we're doing more here, which is user testing. So actually giving users the chance who haven't had their heads in this for the last few months to actually have a play with it and give kind of bring fresh eyes and give us I guess a perspective from the real world.
Fascinating, Liz.
So look, just to I just have a question for you, Liz. So you were talking about new products and the way we make apps in the future, and we're sort of you're looking at the Google model and what they do, like how they got advertisers to basically fund a product for people who aren't paying anything. So when you talk about coming up with a creative solution for, say, like to avoid having ads in apps, are you talking about like which apps do we build, as in like the product we're looking at this wrong, or like better ways to integrate advertising into existing apps?
Well,
or what?
I think that the advertising model, in my view, will break down because they're not effective. Like, just because I see an ad for, Telstra in my app, it doesn't make me want to purchase Telstra products.
Yeah. Can I say this comes back to my addiction at the moment, Disco Zoo. The way they're doing their ads, and maybe a lot of free to play games are like this, but I don't play that many free to play games. The way they're doing ads is if you sort of use some coins to do some things, and they're like, if you want a little bit more, you could just watch an ad, and then you go to a full screen ad, and typically the ads are really like they're really engaging videos, and they're about games that look really fun. And I am playing a game right now, so that like I've never clicked on one out of principle, obviously, but it's almost tempting.
Sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
That's
I feel like they're doing it. It's still ads, and it's a bit sleazy, but they're doing it in a really good way.
I would like to see advertisers get much more intelligent with their advertising instead of shouting to people that this product is great, everybody does that. There are ways to say, hey, I know you know that this is an ad and I know that you're intelligent. The reason why you want to buy our product is, and then list, like actually be able to communicate a benefit in an interesting way. Like that example you just gave, Kent, is perfect. Someone who's interested in games wants to see an ad that is not just a blurry, pixelated.
Yeah, I want to see a video of it. Show me a full screen video of why your game is cool.
It looks fun. Yeah. It looks like something I would like to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You can take it that one step further. Like I think the creative potential for ads to be absolutely kind of this really interesting thing where people want to see ads. Like, think about, in the 90s there were the TV shows about the best ads around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an advertising golden age.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't have to be TV now. TV's probably not working as well as it should because you spend a lot of money to do a TV slot and you don't get that same level of return. Mm-hmm. But in digital, in mobile, you can target specific groups of people.
Yeah.
And you know that they're going to be interested in your product.
And you're getting that personal experience. Like it's like we talked about, you've got this thing in your pocket, it travels with you. It's an extension of yourself.
Yeah.
As opposed to TV, which is kind of this thing blaring at you in your lounge room.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience.
You change the channel because you don't want to see that ad.
The hardest thing about my job is working really hard on a design and just getting it to like as good as it can be and getting it signed off by clients and getting it signed off internally and getting people excited about it, and then goes into development.
And you see the ads
and
the
you see the ads just spew into your perfect design, and it's probably not perfect, but into a nice design. And it just kills me.
To me, that's 2014. Yeah, I hope in 2018.
It's just a legacy thing from the web. And I was reading an article on the weekend that was talking about banner advertising comes from the whole idea of you know, hits, like a click-through rate, which was this concept that some guy came up with 25 years ago. And that is the metric for all digital marketing. And it's and all it does is create link bait. And no one is thinking about brand fatigue. No one is thinking about user frustration.
Exactly.
It's, I mean, it's not doing you any good to shove your logo into someone's face as many times as possible, especially on a mobile device where it's going to be about 48 pixels, you know, tall, you know. So it's, it's crazy. We just have to, it's the most obvious broken
it's part the gawky of, teenage phase.
Of
which we'll get through.
What the industry is doing
and
right now.
It's funny, like, I feel like Apple tried to fix that.
Well, with, I think Apple has lots of answer
to fix
for.
That. No, they tried to fix that with iAds, right? That was their, in their opinion, their solution.
But when iAds came out, it was like, what are we going to do?
No, but it's something.
Banner ad. Like, it was awful.
Well, it wasn't it. I thought it was like a small banner ad that went to a full screen experience. I never actually saw one. That's the point.
It was to me, I just saw that as a cash grab. They were just like, oh, let's put advertising in it. So we're just going to take the 80 pixels from the bottom of the screen and it'll be dismissed.
Shove a banner there.
But a really nice ad I saw there, just talking about good execution, using Flipboard the other day, and I know we spoke about this in the podcast, but just flipping in the next article, full page ad for Lexus. Just
nice,
a really nice, beautiful, graphic, glossy magazine style ad. And it wasn't offensive at all. I was like, oh, there's an ad. Okay. And I know that
my next vehicle will be a Lexus.
But it was like, it was a nice, like, if I look back at it, it was a nice, you know, brand impression. I got the car. I saw the sexy girl. I saw the logo.
They're working the advertising into the app. They're not like,
it was beautifully integrated. It just looked like another piece of content. It was just this full, you know, old term, full bleed, you know, ad.
Where are you from, Pete? What industry do you come from?
It looks really great. And it's, does anyone ever, in the whole entire world, does anyone like banner ads?
I don't know.
On a website. Yeah, even if you just step outside the mobile space.
Yeah,
I think the web has a lot to answer for as well. It's like, come on, guys. Let's solve this problem.
What Luce was saying was really pertinent. Is that we're just stuck in this model.
Yeah.
And we just need to come up with a better model.
I think Google, again, with YouTube.
Because advertising is important, you know, because I use all these free services and I love free services.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for advertising to pay for that.
I have an example of really good and really bad.
Then we're going to round out this conversation.
Okay, sorry.
This is your thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so I think YouTube is sort of, it's getting there with its ad model. Would you guys agree or disagree? In the way really that it's like, you want to watch this, you can skip it in 5 seconds.
Yeah,
I think that's
and if it's managed to engage you in the first 5 seconds,
it feels right. Yeah, and it's making advertisers go, oh, we've got 5 seconds. We've got to really pull this out of the bag. To me, I think that's a good model. What isn't a good model, I was using can I just say it? Is it? I think it may have been built by a competitor. Is that?
okay.
It's constructive criticism. It's constructive criticism. But it's talking about those, you know, old models. And I'm sure they're aware of it and they hate it as well, because it's just exactly what I was talking about. The Winter Olympics app, I was like, oh, cool. You can watch live content for free. This is amazing. This is going to be so cool. And then it started and they played like a full 30-second TVC. And I thought to myself, wow, that's
a long time
on
a mobile device.
And it felt like 8 hours.
Yeah.
And then it finished and then I clicked on the next bit of content that I wanted to watch, the next event, and they played an ad, but it was the same ad. And this time it was 30 seconds again.
Oh, no.
So
you had the same 30-second ad within,
just not thinking. And it was, you know, it was a nice ad or whatever. It was just like an old school TVC. But
TV commercial?
How incredibly frustrating. Please think of the users.
Yeah.
I know you've just seen this ad. We're going to pump it to you again. And somewhere there's a spreadsheet that says like, this ad got 87 million impressions. So like I breached my KPI, which is just like, you know, everything's broken and it needs to be fixed.
Okay. And rant. Thank you for listening to Pete's advertising podcast. We'll be back next week.
You're here with the ad boys.
Luce, thank you for that discussion. I think that's great, and I'm sure you're going to get a HD on your master's.
Thanks.
So So don't worry about that. I want to add a tiny little bit of value to our listeners before we go. And I want to
see what he did there.
I'm a marketer since way back. I just want to quickly go around and basically name. We were talking about sort of apps and the fact that mobile devices are being used in the workplace more and more. So I reckon if everyone just names an app that they use for work, but on their iOS or Android device, and basically why it's good. So I'm going to start. I use Fantastical for my calendar stuff. So if I know there's quite a few calendar apps out on iOS. Everyone's picked up their phones like, ooh, have I got that? Ooh, maybe I'll download that.
Calendar, I can't crack the code of how to do calendar.
It's just like, too hard. It's just
like,
too hard.
Like, it's all synced and it's meant to work, but it's just, yeah. It's not perfect.
I use Fantastical. It's synced up to Google Calendar and it works.
It works quite well with
that. A treat for me, yeah.
Because I now get alerts from every single person I've ever met in my life. All of their calendar alerts now come up my phone. Like, really? Constantly being alerted every 20 seconds.
I get
someone's having dinner with someone in China right now.
I get alerted for every stand-up calendar. So, yeah, it'll be like, I'm like, okay, that's good.
Pro tip, turn them off.
I did turn it off, but I don't think my phone knows that I turned it off.
Eitan, do you have any hot tip? Is there a certain app that you use for work or productivity? Sort of.
I find myself using Evernote more than I thought that I would. I use it all the time in meetings, so I can just bring an iPad, tap it in. It's got a nice Mac app, so when I get back to my computer, it's just kind of there.
So you just know your notes are going to be synced.
Yeah, it's great having all my notes synced, and you know, I don't use a notebook anymore. I used to be Mr. Notebook, and now I use Evernote. So
you moved on.
I've gone back in time.
You
guys pay me out on it every podcast. I don't have.
You haven't got your
today.
Book this week. You just got a sheet of paper.
Piece of paper because I'm sick of being teased.
It's like me bringing like a little resistor or something, you know, as opposed to my whole phone.
So I've gone back to the big yearly planner book, and it has like grid paper in there as well, which is really nice. But
what version?
shut up. When you say apps, are you talking about specifically
on your device?
Oh, okay.
Bits of software that run on your phone.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's actually what we all do here.
Oh, and
that big room out there, that's actually what we're doing. Yeah.
I have started using the Asana, depending on how you pronounce
Asana.
It.
Asana.
It's a yoga
term. Pose.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. That's completely wrong.
I think it means to sit on Kent's head.
to make him shut up.
To assign tasks to someone else.
Tell someone else to do the pose.
Okay, it's so if you're
the mobile
using
apps,
Asana,
the website's okay. It's pretty good. It's a to-do list basically that you can share. And the mobile apps, I feel it's over-designed. Like there's a lot. The UI is a bit sort of clunky and a bit fiddly. It looks nice, but I'd prefer to see more native-looking. App because it seems a bit sort of bloaty.
It's what you want on your phone. Nice. Luce, do you have any recommendations? You're an Android user.
Do you have
a nice Android app?
But I actually, for work, I'm with you, Eitan. I use Evernote for meeting minutes, but I'm also with you, Pete. I take notes on a notebook and I do have a notebook in front of me.
You're keeping it real.
Yeah. And I find that it's still a lot easier to write something down than it is to type something on my iPad.
And whenever you write a list, I've seen you do this so many times. Whenever you write a list on your notebook, you always put a little square next to it.
If it's a task.
I love that. If it's a task, I love that.
I have a whole system. It's actually, you guys should look it up. It's called the Bullet Journal System. And
I thought you made it. It's not like Lucia.
Really simple analog system that allows you to kind of know whether you did something or not, or whether there's just something that happened that you want to remember.
We should turn that into an app.
Old school.
Yeah. And then I won't use it.
I also like using paper because it's just a nice break from looking at a screen.
Yeah, true.
And it's, I like using my hands because I'm a human and I have an opposable thumb.
You're a creative. You're a special, special creative, Peter.
I think different strokes for different folks. And it's my brain works better when I can map stuff out on a page and sort of give things different hierarchy instantly so I can draw stuff really big or to take 90
well, you're very visual and it's hard to easily distinguish things visually in a piece of software because it's probably not designed for that.
Exactly.
Actually, but I've gone so far down there, I feel like something that's written down in a pen with my hand isn't actually real. Well, yeah, I went through notebooks where I'd written a whole year's worth of notes and I'd never looked at them.
Yeah.
I'd write them and I never looked at it again.
For me,
it's not written on a computer or something.
It's not in the cloud.
No, that's synced. No, that's exactly it. If I don't write something that is synced, like basically if it's not in Google Drive, it may as well not exist. That's honestly how I feel about it. If it's important. Yeah.
I work with some weird people.
Yeah, I agree, Pete. But actually, something really interesting if we've got a minute.
Okay, yeah.
Have any of you actually use a stylus on an iPad?
Never.
Because I recently just bought my sister a very incredibly expensive stylus.
Are we talking hundreds, thousands?
Not thousands.
His name is Jose and he's good at makeup and hair.
But over $100.
Yeah,
Because one of her colleagues had one and she said, it's amazing.
Yep.
And it writes like mm-hmm. a pen. I still find it hard to write with it, but she loves it.
She's got the hang of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know.
That's the transition. That's where we can.
Maybe. Because I still think it's really hard to type out something on an iPad. It's just not as quick.
I don't. Eitan, you do it all day long.
I find that. Yeah. I get my Apple Newton out.
Just to remind you.
Voice to text.
How far we've come. Guys, it's 6 o'clock. It's Friday night. What do you reckon we get out of here? What do you reckon?
My boss is here, so I'm just going
to burn
the midnight oil, go lower to the kit.
Yeah, well, might make it home by Sunday if I'm lucky. Eitan, can you tell the listeners how they can follow us on Twitter?
You follow, what's that?
I gave the hint.
Yeah. It's squiggly thing. What do we call that in the modern age?
I believe it's called an ampersand.
The French have a great word for it.
Yeah, I know.
It's an ampersand.
It's the at symbol.
It's totally
at symbol.
Does it actually have a name?
Ampersand. Outwear. OUTWARE. Oh, sorry, not ampersand. I wonder what ampersand does in Twitter.
I've ruined it.
Unfollows everyone you know and deletes your account. At outwear.
Right.
OUTWARE.
Thank you. Yeah, that's we really spell it out because we just obviously know how outwear is spelled. It comes from outside software, i.e. mobile devices outside outwear.
I don't think that's ever been communicated outside.
Oh my goodness.
Out loud.
Out loud.
It's out now.
Found our secret.
Thank you for listening to the OM podcast, the Outwear Mobile podcast. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.